system. And the fly in the ointment is gonna bring the whole thing down.
Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. So is it deja vu all over again? Are we simply, is the messaging that coming out of Fox News the same kind of drumbeat that we saw in the run-up to Iraq? I got to be honest, I'm literally freaked out when I hear our president say, you know, hey, this could be the calm before the storm, and there's only one way to deal with North Korea. I got to be honest, it's troubling, it's concerning, it's all of that. Here to talk about it, I've asked Craig Harrington. He's the Associate Research Director over at Media Matters for America. Craig, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me again.
So am I getting this right? I mean, you know, I'm watching Fox News. I'm seeing a lot of the same kinds of, you know, that kind of fear, that kind of drumbeat. Am I getting this right?
Yeah, and actually, if you've been watching Fox News at all this morning, they've done a lot of sort of scaremongering and fear tactics about Iranian military capabilities and Iranian ties to terror organizations and the supposed threat that those organizations present to the United States. They've spent a lot of time on that this morning. But the reason that we're talking is because yesterday, Fox News did something that was literally just taken directly out of the Iraq War playbook, which is that they spent a significant amount of their news apparatus invested a significant amount of time and editorial resources into promoting a report from an exile government or an organization that considers itself an exile government of Iran, which claimed that Iran was in violation of its nuclear proliferation commitments and its commitments and compliance standards with the Iran nuclear deal brokered in 2015. Yesterday, Fox and Friends promoted this segment all morning long, and then on October 10th, they actually had an exclusive report on FoxNews.com from an organization that calls itself the National Council of Resistance of Iran, which claimed that Iran was in violation of its nuclear commitments. And if, of course, Iran is in violation of the nuclear commitments, then the Iran deal falls apart, then diplomacy falls apart, and even Democrats in 2015 were saying that the only way to guarantee that Iran never achieved a nuclear weapon without a military intervention was this kind of diplomatic dialogue, and if that diplomatic dialogue fails, then you fall back to the baseline option of military intervention in Iran. The problem with this is that the National Council of Resistance of Iran fills the same role that the Iraqi National Congress filled in 2002 and 2003, which is it's a government or it's an organization that considers itself a government in exile. It's made up of exiled Iranians. The INC, of course, was made up of exiled Iraqis. And if they can convince the United States government to intervene against the legitimate government in Tehran, as it did against the government in Baghdad in 2003, every member of that organization stands to benefit enormously, potentially taking over whatever government is constructed in the wake, in the vacuum of a military conflict between the United States and Iran. If we did topple the government in Tehran the way we toppled the government in Baghdad, this is exactly what happened in the lead up to the Iraq War. And Fox News is now basically dusting off the playbook that it used during the drumbeat of the Iraq War, and now applying that directly to Iran. Luckily, Trump hasn't been able to get himself undistracted from the chaos in his own administration and his inability to deal with the crisis in Puerto Rico and his hatred of black athletes in the NFL. So he hasn't really been focused on Iran yet. But there's plenty of time, and he's widely expected to decertify the Iran deal anytime between Friday and Sunday, when the deadline actually will lapse, about whether or not we can recertify that agreement. So we're definitely standing on the edge of a precipice, and Fox News is definitely employing the same tactics that it used in 2001, 2002, and 2003 to push us over that edge.
Yeah, I mean, I look at this, and again, the drumbeat out of the White House has been, we're going to pull out of that deal. And I've been asking the question, what happens then? I mean, I have a friend who's a military expert who said, if you think Iraq was fun, if you think Iraq was dangerous, if you think Iraq was bad, wait till you start fiddling around with Iran, because they actually have a functional military and a functional air force, and that these diplomatic ties that the ability to do these inspections is the only real sane way to go forward. But I got to be honest, I have very little faith in Donald Trump, to be honest. I have very little faith.
Yeah, and, you know, the point you made, if you talk to military people about, you know, Iraq versus Iran, first of all, the foremost conclusion you could take away is that the United States would win any conventional war against any military anywhere in the world.
Right.
So could we defeat Iran? Yes. But everyone remembers how devastating the Iraq War was, how it became this eight-year quagmire that cost thousands of American lives, tens of thousands of American injuries, hundreds of thousands of Iraqi dead civilians and military members. And Iran has so much more going for it in 2017 than Iraq did in 2003. First and foremost, it's almost four times the size of Iraq in terms of its land area, and its population is more than twice the size of Iraq. Add to that the fact that in 2003, we attacked Iraq 12 years after having already devastated its military just 12 years before, and after having put in place grinding economic and diplomatic and military sanctions that had been in place for 12 years,
yep,
which essentially hollowed out its command and control structure and completely weakened and decimated its military. Iran faces none of those problems. And it's important to point out that when we first attacked Iraq in the early 1990s, Iraq was just emerging from an eight-year war with Iran,
right,
which devastated both countries. All of our attacks against Iraq have been attacks that were launched against an enemy that was in a completely weakened state. That's not the case with Iran. It's bigger, it's wealthier, it's more powerful, its military is better equipped, its economy is more robust, the terrain is much more difficult for the United States military to operate in, and ever since they stormed our embassy in 1979, the Iranian government has been preparing itself for a U.S. ground invasion, and that is particularly the case since 2002 and 2003 when we put hundreds of thousands of troops on their border in Iraq and Afghanistan. Iran is prepared for a U.S. military invasion. They are prepared for it. It will be much worse than the Iraq War, and that's the thing that people don't really understand. You don't have to be a member of the United States military to look at a map and realize that any confrontation with Iran is going to be terrible for the United States, even if technically by the strategy, by the tactics, and by the measurements, we would win the fight.
Well, here's the question. I keep coming back to this. You know, with Iraq, I don't know what winning looks like. We still haven't defined what winning is there or in Afghanistan. What would winning look like in Iran? Or are we just dropping bombs for the sake of, hey, it's 5 o'clock, let's drop some bombs?
Well, you know, I've recently been binge-watching Ken Burns' incredible documentary series on the Vietnam War, and despite some legitimate criticisms of the way it portrays the fighting and the reasons that the United States were there, one of the overarching themes that you get after a couple of hours of reviewing the documentary footage is that the United States' approach to the Vietnam War was purely about numbers. You know, we didn't know who we were fighting. We didn't know why we were fighting. We didn't support the government that we were supporting. We didn't actually like the incredibly corrupt South Vietnamese officials who we were defending against communism. But what we did know is that we could kill more North Vietnamese and more Viet Cong soldiers than they could kill American and South Vietnamese soldiers. And we knew that we had better equipment and that we had better delivery systems, that we could drop more bombs, that we could fire more artillery shells, that we could send in more tanks, and that we could kill more of them than they could kill of us. And that basically is the same proposition that was applied to Iraq. We had no idea why we were there. We had no reason to support the government that we were supporting. But technically, our soldiers were out-battling their soldiers and out-battling the insurgents after the military crumbled and dissipated into the communities, into the surrounding communities. If that's what the best-case scenario is for Iran, you know, we've seen this movie before. We did this in Vietnam. We did this in Iraq. We're still doing it today in Afghanistan. There's no reason to think that there's some magic bullet where we can go in and do things better this time. But there is a lot of reason to believe that things will turn out very badly for us if we do decide to just abandon diplomacy and go back to this sort of bellicose interventionism, which Donald Trump seems to prefer.
Yeah, I mean, if body count is the way we define victory, then yeah, I'm sure we'll kill more of them. But at what cost to us? At what cost to us in blood and also in treasure and opportunity for future generations? I mean, it just all of this to me seems like we're heading down the absolute worst possible path, only because we've got a guy who's incapable of being somewhat diplomatic, because you know, I've got friends who go to Iran quite often, and you know, they come back and say, look, there's a large portion of the Iranian population who doesn't like their leadership. They want to be more westernized. They want an economy, you know, like ours. They want a lot of they want a lot of what we have. But, you know, it keeps coming back to this kind of stuff, this kind of chest thumping and these kind of threats is what gives the hardliners, you know, the ammunition to attack them.
And I think that's one of the things that's particularly pervasive and pernicious about the way conservative media, the apologists and the defenders of Trump, the way that they're approaching Iran, the way that they're approaching North Korea, is no one is really pointing out the fact that they're at the end of the day, on the other end of the spectrum, are millions of people who have thoughts and feelings and emotions and preferences and who can be negotiated with because they have the same end goals that any American would have. The Iranian people are just people at the end of the day. But when they're discussed on Fox News, when they are discussed, unfortunately, in the halls of power in the White House, you're just talking about an organization that seems like a big monolithic enemy. And that's exactly how the media were portraying Iraq in the lead up to the disastrous Iraq war in 2002 and 2003. Luckily, so far, your CNNs and your MSNBCs are providing better context, talking about the human devastation that a military intervention in Iran or North Korea would reap on the Iranian and Korean people. But unfortunately, Trump doesn't view those news organizations other than to complain about the tone of their coverage of him. So when he does view news, and we know he watches Fox and Friends, what he's seeing is this kind of propagandistic, exaggerated, maybe even fabricated intelligence information coming from an unsubstantiated source that has a lot to personally benefit from if the United States were to intervene on their behalf in Iran. If he's seeing this information on the news, what he's seeing is the stuff that Fox and Friends is piping directly into his television and into his handset, into his phone. And that's a real problem, how the media is able to influence Trump and how influence groups like the National Council of Resistance of Iran are potentially able to influence Trump through his preferred media outlets.
I got to be honest, you know, just hearing you lay that out, this is a guy who has access to top generals, to all of our most secret information, to all of the agencies that do this, and yet he's taking his information from talking heads at Fox News.
Yeah, I mean, it was widely reported on October 9th, the head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, which is one of the six constituent organizations that is responsible for inspecting this nuclear regime. The others are the Chinese, French, German, Russian, American, British, and Iranian governments. The IAEA said that Iran was in full compliance. The next day, the British Prime Minister, Theresa May, calls Donald Trump and personally asks him to stay in the Iran deal because Iran is fully compliant and because the deal is vital for regional and international security. And it seems to have not made a dent in his preconceived notions, in his preconceived conclusions about what the right path is. And unfortunately, the fact is that the Iran deal is an Obama legacy project, and Trump is, if nothing else, very astute at dismantling all of the vestiges of the prior administration. This is really nothing, something that we've never seen before.
Right. Let me ask you what might seem a stupid question, and it's kind of just an opinion question. Do you think it's that simple? Do you really think that it's anything Obama did has to go? Because anything, you know, we've been telling ourselves for, you know, so long, he's bad, that everything has to go. And regardless of if this deal is working or if this agreement is working and if we're going in the right direction, regardless of that, it has to go. Is it that simple?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly seems that way. And his media diet certainly seems to be influencing this preconception, this misconception that he has, that everything that Obama did has to be dismantled. It's important to remember, you know, all of the plans that Trump got behind with regard to repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act, every one of those plans would have taken health insurance coverage away from between 22 million and 32 million Americans, and he just kept supporting every single repeal plan that came up because it was going to repeal Obamacare, and he claimed Obamacare's failing, it's a disaster, it's hurting families. And that's because that's what he hears on Fox News. That's what he hears on Breitbart. That's what he hears on Rush Limbaugh's program and on Alex Jones's program. Even though it's not true, his media diet, his information system is entirely balanced or entirely biased by these right-wing fringe characters who consider everything that from the Obama legacy to be a disaster. So he legitimately seems to believe that everything that Obama did is a disaster and needs to be destroyed, even when, in reality, many of those things are very good and benefiting hundreds of millions of people in the United States and around the world every single day.
Now, I mean, scary, scary times when you look at this with Iran and, you know, his ongoing feud with Un in North Korea. Look, I don't know how big he thinks our military is. I just don't know that you can do both at the same time and then still have all of our other obligations. This is nothing good here. Nothing good.
Yeah. I mean, Trump certainly, he seems to have a very, he seems like the sort of least common denominator of what you would expect with regard to someone's information diet. You know, everyone remembers in the wake of Benghazi, people had this sort of cartoonish implication, cartoonish conception of how the military could have just flown fighter jets over and hot roped in and saved the troops if it really cared about it. And the reason that it became such a scandal, even though it wasn't a scandal at all, was because millions of people had a cartoonish perception of how the United States military operates, how the international diplomatic system works, and how the United States can just flex its muscles whenever they want. They essentially think the world is a Michael Bay film. And it seems every day more and more confirmed that that's actually how Donald Trump thinks as well.
Scary, scary stuff. And as I said from the beginning, we'll talk about it when you're willing to put Ivanka, the little junior, Eric, and maybe little Barron, and the one that nobody ever talks about. Put them on the front lines first and we'll talk. That simple. Craig, I appreciate the time, man. Great talking with you.
Thank you.
Always good talking to our friend Craig Harrington, Media Matters. Amazing, amazing stuff. Quick break, right back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.